Coming up on this episode of DL Weekly, the live-action Ariel arrives at the resort, Sleeping Beauty Castle Disney 100 decorations are complete,
Space Mountain turns 46 at Disneyland, a new turkey leg flavor, we talk with Disney illustrator Rick Law, and more. DL Weekly starts now.
Well, hello there. Welcome to our unbirthday party. For your safety, please be sure to stay listening with your hands, arms, feet, and ears inside the podcast. And please, do give Peg and Teresa easier trivia questions. Well, it seems DL Weekly is about to begin. Have a most wonderful time. Perhaps tea time.
Hello and welcome to this episode of DL Weekly for the week of May 31st, 2023. I'm Teg Bushman.
And I'm Teresa Urban. We would like to thank all of the current weekly tiers, including Katie G, Sunshine B, Claire G, and Donna S for supporting the show. Without your support, DL Weekly would not be possible. Your support ensures that the podcast will continue and that we can make it to the parks more often to bring you the latest news and information right from the parks. If you would like to become an official weekly tier, head on over to dlweekly.net/support to sign up.
Well, it's that time again for our friend Eric over at Concierge to catch us up on other Disney news.
Hello, everyone. This is Eric Johnson with Concierge, and welcome to the D180. While Teg and Teresa cover all things Disneyland, in the D180, we take a spin there around the rest of the Disney universe, and we do it in about 180 seconds. Let's jump right in. We start our journey this week on the East Coast of Canada. That's right. We're talking about the new itinerary from Adventures by Disney, where you will be escorted through the natural and cultural wonders of Canada's maritime provinces and their roots with First Nation inhabitants and Celtic settlers. That was a run-on sentence, folks. Your journey begins in Halifax, the capital of Nova Scotia, a city that is growing faster than any other in the province. You won't stay long, but you'll be back soon enough, don't worry. The second day of your adventure brings you north to Sugar Moon Farm, where you will learn about the region's famous maple syrup and taste some tapped straight from the tree. Ferry across the Gulf of St. Lawrence to Canada's smallest province, Prince Edward Island. You'll explore the coastline, learning about its unique ecosystem, and tour one of the region's oldest lighthouses. The tour takes you through the historic town that inspired the Anne of Green Gables books by Lucy Maud Montgomery. After crossing the Confederation Bridge, a Canadian engineering marvel that leads west, more adventure awaits you in New Brunswick. You can tour on a lobster boat and enjoy a lobster meal sourced about as close as you can imagine. The Bay of Fundy awaits you next, a natural wonder with the world's most intense tidal flow. Seriously, though, its flow moves 110 billion tons of water four times a day, dropping down 52 feet at low tide. Kayak, canoe, explore on horseback, or just watch that tide come and go. The trip takes you eventually back to Halifax, where you can learn about the Mi'kmaq people who originally settled this area. Their cultural traditions endure, and they are excited to share both their history and present-day activities. Hiking through salt marshes will connect you in a special way to this unique region of the continent. End your trip with a quick sailing experience aboard a schooner that has been sailing the seas for nearly a century. Every moment of your 8-day adventure offers new opportunities for excitement, exploration, learning, and relaxation. These Adventures by Disney trips are pricier than your average parks trip, but they are so worth it. Every journey is curated by Disney with two expert guides that accompany your group. Unique experiences abound as you venture into areas most tourists never see. If you're all in for this adventure or any others around the world, get in touch with one of our planners today. We are excited to find the perfect experience for your family. And if you insist on heading to a place like, Walt Disney World, I should probably mention that they have a bunch of discounts this summer. Many nights from July through September, you can save from 10 to 30% on rooms around most of the Disney World Resort hotels. Buying park tickets is also made easier with an incredible deal on 4-day tickets. Just $99 per day, people. For slightly less than $400, you can visit one park per day with no reservations required. Huh, I may be calling one of my planner friends about this deal. But which planner do I pick, though? Well, that's 180 seconds. I hope you enjoyed our quick spin around the rest of the Disney universe. If you would like to learn more about these Disney adventures or just have a few questions, please come on over. Visit the social media and websites of both DL Weekly and us, their official travel planners, concierge. We look forward to planning something special for you and yours. I'm Eric Johnson, and this has been your D180.
Thanks, Eric.
Well, you've heard us talk about our great experiences staying at the Howard Johnson Anaheim. Well, we have partnered with them to offer our listeners some really cool discounts. Weekly tiers can get 15% off their stay, and Magic Keyholder weekly tiers can take 20% off. To take advantage of these discounts, head on over to dlweekly.net and click on the Howard Johnson logo. Be sure to use the promo codes on the site to get the discount you qualify for.
Now let's get to the news.
Weekly tiers who want to see Ariel from the live-action The Little Mermaid have a chance to at Disneyland, Walt Disney World, and Disneyland Paris. She is meeting guests in Fantasyland near It's a Small World in a spot inspired by Eric's library filled with Whozits and Whatsits galore. There was also some limited-time treats, including the purple pineapple shell macaron, which is a purple macaron with blue pineapple buttercream, and a chocolate pearl, giant chocolate pearl. And there was also a mermaid strawberry cake.
I am very sad that these treats were not around very long because that macaron sounds delicious.
It's cute. It's so cute. I like that it's not like a your regular macaron where it's just a like sandwich look. They have it kind of propped open, so it's like a the clamshell opening.
Oh, sure.
So I thought that was really cute.
I'm trying to like look at this.
The other thing too, just because I actually had someone at work ask me about this today. Both versions of Ariel are meeting. So we've got our brand new, beautiful, live-action Ariel meeting over at It's a Small World. But the animated version of Ariel is also still in the parks, but she can be found. You meet her in the Princess Fantasy Fair. I can't get over the set. The set that they have, the new live-action Little Mermaid. It's so cool. Even if Ariel's not out for you to meet, it's such a cool, like, I would just probably be a weirdo nerd and like take time to just like look at the details on this thing, because for those of you that have seen the live action movie, there's a lot of little Easter eggs from the movie in this set, and I think that's really cool.
Why my Google foo is ruining me tonight, because I was trying to just find a picture of this. And I am unable to, because I was curious to see what it looks. Is this it?
Yeah.
That is really detailed and elaborate for a meet and greet area.
Well, and like I said, that's only part of it. Look at the like cabinet that has all the stuff in it. It's gorgeous.
They did a really nice job on that. That's exciting. Do we know, like...
And Ariel looks gorgeous. I love her outfit.
Is this going to be throughout the summer?
Shoes. I don't know how long she's meeting. I hope for a while, because I love it.
I love it, too. It looks really good. Oh, I also told you to remind me, since we're talking about Ariel in the parks, that on our stream this last weekend, we talked about, because you had seen The Little Mermaid, I asked you to follow up with me on what I thought of The Little Mermaid.
Oh, we're doing a bonus episode.
Oh, are we? Well, we're doing a bonus episode on that, so if you're a supporter of ours at the annual pass holder level or above, be sure to look out for that next month, because we're going to talk about our feelings on the movie.
Yeah, both The Little Mermaid and Guardians of the Galaxy 3, which you have seen as of now.
When are you seeing that?
I have not seen it yet. Soon, I hope. Soon. Maybe this weekend is what I'm hoping.
Okay. It's probably one of my favorite Disney live-action remakes.
I think so, too. No, I think so,
I don't
too.
Think it's the best, but I think it's one of the best.
Nope, I agree.
5 months after the start of the Disney 100 celebration, and some of the details are just now complete. The final finials have finally been installed on top of the highest turrets of Sleeping Beauty Castle. We have no idea why this took so long, but we're glad that it is done.
Yes, and I kind of want to see, so we of course have links in the show notes to a Mice Chat article that has a photo of the finished tops of the towers, but it looks like it was a little overcast and a little cloudy that day, so they're not shining in the sun. But I can't wait to see these in person, or to see a photo of these in the sunshine, to like really see details a little bit better. But It looks fun. We were talking about this because we were trying to remember which ones were missing when we were there last. And I just think, I don't know how many people really take the time to sit there and look at the tops of the turrets and the fun ornamental things that are on top. That's what those are called finials. But there's some really, really fun and unique ones. The one I like the best, the star doesn't count because that one's just on its own,
right,
own cool level. The one I like the best is to the left of the star. And it's just this kind of weird little, I don't know, it's like a tree looking thing with these like spheres on the end. It's just, I just like how it looks. It's funny to me. I like it.
It's funny because I'm just on Instagram right now and I'm trying, everybody takes pictures in front of Sleeping Beauty Castle. So I'm trying to find a photo from like today that somebody posted. And apparently nobody posts on the same day of anything because all of these are ones when the finials weren't there. Oh, here we go. That's not even the Disney 100. Oh, well, I was just curious to see if there was one in the bright thing. I'm glad that they're here. Again, it seems like such a small detail, but all those small details always make a huge difference. And so I've been wondering myself, like, what is taking so long? But I'm guessing that these were probably specifically manufactured for this, you know, and, you know, they're probably just now getting around to finally getting to the end of supply chain issues from COVID and everything like that. So it is complete, finally.
Well, a fun summer dance party is returning this year. Stitch's Interplanetary Dance Party Blast has come back to Tomorrowland. The dance party features characters dressed in goofy space-themed costumes. I have not seen this, but I love these character costumes.
You were excited about this last year.
It's the character costumes for me. I mean, look at Goofy. He's got a colander on his head, like flipped upside down on his head, wearing it as a hat with like these funny little things poking out to the side. So it's like his space helmet with his, look at his like cool, like galactic shorts and his purple top. So that's his like swim trunks and his like swim shirt. And he's got little water wings on his arm. Cute. It's so fun.
Okay. I have a question. This is really silly and only tangentially related, of course.
Yeah, that cracks.
Does Goofy and Chip and Dale, do the characters in the parks, are these outfits?
Oh, do you think they have like a clothes, like a closet?
Like, can you put different things on or are these specifically unique? Like permanently attached?
Yeah, I don't know.
Because I feel like some of these, like Chip and Dale, I feel like you could just put that on.
Yeah.
But I'm just curious, like Goofy, I don't know. I just never thought about it. Like Mickey and Minnie, like when they have their outfits. Are those things that they put on or is that something that's part of the whole thing?
Yeah, part of.
Well, I'm sure there's weekly tiers out there that could probably tell us.
I'm sure someone knows the details. I could almost, my thought process, this is just me not knowing anything, is I think yes and no. So I think
depends on what it is.
I think sometimes yes and sometimes no.
Like some of these things, like this on Goofy's head, I feel like has to be attached.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it could fall off. For like these glasses on what? Who is this?
I don't know what Chip and Dale.
Suzette.
Yeah, Suzette.
So is that? Do we know who Suzette is? Sorry, it's like a
Chip and Dale's chipmunk friend, of course.
I just have to look this up because Chip and Dale.
Oh. I know who she is. She's usually wearing like a green dress and has like a
lei on,
like a Hawaiian lei looking necklace thing.
Okay, sorry, I didn't mean to totally derail us, but I was just curious. It looks like fun. I know you were excited about it.
Go back up because you need to see Pluto. Where is he?
Oh,
do they not have?
I don't think there's a picture of Pluto. Do we need to look for Stitch's Interplanetary Party Blast?
Look at that. I didn't even have to do the whole thing. It's like, we know. It is that cool.
Stitch isn't even in, like, a crazy outfit.
No, Stitch is not in an outfit, because...
They had...
Horace and Clarabelle. Oh, here he is. Look at him.
Oh, geez.
He's got an inner tube that has, like, planets orbiting him. I think it's so fun. Don't know why, but I just love these things.
This is like the thing that you just...
I do.
This is your weird, like, thing you want to go see.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like fun. I'm glad that they're adding cool, fun activities for people
to enjoy. For all ages.
Yeah.
For all ages.
All right. I know producer James is very excited about this news. Space Mountain turned 46 this past week. By the way, I did not. Like, if you would ask me, how old do you think Spacebound is? My first inclination would be somewhere in the 20s. But obviously that's wrong, because that would have been
20.
I know, but what I'm saying is, it doesn't seem like it should be 46 for how popular it still is and how great of an attraction it still is. Anyway, to celebrate, Disneyland is offering a Space Mountain stainless steel bottle filled with passion fruit limeade at Alien Pizza Planet, Tomorrowland Lemonade, and the Galactic Grill for $27.99.
What do you think of this sipper?
It's shiny.
It's very futuristic.
I think it's kind of cool.
Would you like take it to, like, this looks like a sipper you could take with you to work.
Oh yeah.
And not look like a crazy person, because you're not drinking out
Well, that wouldn't make me look like a crazy person, but
you're not like drinking out of like some, I'm trying to look at like what sippers we have here.
Like
you're not drinking out of Grogu, or you know what I mean? Like
Drinking out of the thing from the electrical parade.
Yeah, the little snail from the electrical parade.
Yeah, this looks like a normal bottle.
Is it the snail or the turtle? The snail.
Yeah. Plus, Space Mountain is so popular that everybody kind of knows what Space Mountain is. So I feel like it'd be one of those things people would be like, oh, I know that attraction. Mm-hmm. Well, they'd say ride probably.
I'm curious about the passion fruit limeade. That sounds really delicious and refreshing to me.
I do mind lime less than I mind lemon. I'm not a lemon fan, but I think passion fruit's pretty good. We've had some passion fruit something or other in the park before.
Mm-hmm. Fun way to say.
I'm not very excited about this next
story. Do you want to hear something ridiculous before we move on?
Sure.
I got all excited because it was a Disney food blog posted, and the title was, "It's Space Mountain's birthday. Get an exclusive Disney souvenir to celebrate." And I was like, oh, did they bring back the little celebratory buttons that they'd hand out? Because remember, a while ago, when an attraction would be celebrating an anniversary, usually, you know, bigger milestone, not just every single one, they would hand things out to all of the guests visiting that day.
Oh.
And like, so it'd be like a celebration button, but it'd be specific to... So, like, this. So, I was like, oh, was this, like, a specific celebration button to celebrate the anniversary of
but
space?
But it wasn't.
It was not. It was a souvenir cup and drink. I was like, oh, I mean, that's fun, too. But I got all excited because I don't know why, but I really thought it was so fun that they used to do those buttons. Anyways.
Well, today, the day we record this, is the very last day Splash Mountain is open, and they didn't really do anything special for that, either.
I'm not as surprised. Because,
do you know how
is there another attraction or thing that they've done? Like, is it? I guess I can't think of something that they have done like a celebratory farewell.
This sounds
thing for
cynical.
So I guess that's why I'm
don't
not
mean
surprised.
It to. But do you know how much money Disney can make with like Farewell Day Splash Mountain T-shirts and stuff that they could sell?
So anything you could have like farewelled. Happily Ever After in Disney World went and sold a bunch of Farewell.
Yeah.
Look, case in point, they did so much merch for the Glowing Away Forever of the Electrical Parade.
Well, that bit them in the butt, but yes.
Which has...
But Splash Mountain isn't coming back, so I think that would be a safe...
Yeah.
It's not like Splash Mountain is glowing away forever, that they're like, guess what, everybody? We've decided...
We're gonna,
get rid of Tiana, and we're moving...
No.
I'm sure I just said that, and some of our listeners were probably like, yes!
No. Well, Turkey Leg fans unite. There is a new turkey leg in town, and it's available at the snack cart by Guardians of the Galaxy Mission Breakout. The Sriracha glazed turkey leg is $15. The Disney food blog reviewed it and said it doesn't taste much different than a regular turkey leg, but they also said the spice level was pretty mild.
So, maybe someday in the future, maybe when we go with Vern again, he'll get a turkey leg. Does he like the turkey
leg? He does like the turkey leg.
And I'll take a bite. Because my problem with the turkey leg was I got the broken one. I think I've talked about it on the podcast before, and it was just kind of, and I don't like messy food. It was just a whole, I'd prepare better now. I'd maybe bring my bamboo set of Disney utensils and like cut it and all of that.
And go sit at a table and eat it?
Yeah, maybe that would be better. But honestly, the turkey legs have been one of those treats that have never really, in fact, I think on the Hub Crawl we had a question about like an overrated Disney treat, and pretty much everybody agreed that the turkey legs were overrated by like everybody. Now, I'm also not a spicy person, but they're saying from the Disney food blog that it's not that spicy. They said it's kind of like they just added sriracha to the glaze. So,
that'd
I don't
be
know.
Nice, cuz then it just gives it a little something, but not like.
What's your opinion of the turkey legs?
I'm not a big turkey fan in general.
What do you do for Thanksgiving?
So for Thanksgiving, I've never told you this.
I'm sure you have, but our listeners. Things.
Like, we've done prime rib. We've done, like, ribs. We've done steaks. We've done
very non-traditional.
Barbecue. Yeah, all non-traditional. We still do some, like, some sort of a something
sides and
that's
stuff.
Not, like, something we have every night type of thing. So we do something a little bit more special. But, yeah, I'm not a big
turkey. But not turkey. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not a big turkey person.
Hmm. I wasn't a turkey person for a long time, but that's because I think most of my life I had dry turkey.
Oh.
And the last few times we've cooked it, like, we've been in charge of cooking it, and we've just... We either, if it's just a couple of us, we'll do the turkey breast, which stays moister because it doesn't have to cook as long, or we'll cook the whole turkey, but we'll like slather it in.
You know this, you had Thanksgiving dinner here one year.
Our listeners didn't have Thanksgiving dinner here.
I thought you were asking because you didn't know.
No, no.
Got it.
Because didn't we have like,
it was
prime rib or something? We had something crazy here,
it was,
I thought.
Yeah, it was, I don't remember what we had, but yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, so yeah, turkey... And actually, when we have turkey for Thanksgiving, I never eat. The leg just sits there. In fact, the leg gets the worst cook because it's by itself. It's usually the part that's somewhat not covered when it's in the oven. And that gets dry and icky. And yeah. So, I don't know. It's just... the turkey leg at Disneyland is such an interesting phenomenon.
It is. Like, well, at Disney parks because it's at
right.
World, too.
But it's just... Like, why that? Anyway... Weekly tiers that go solo to the parks and love soaring around the world have an easier way to do so. The single rider line is now available for soaring at Disney California Adventure.
This would be a fun one. Like, this one makes sense to have a single rider line on. Since it is such a, in the grand scheme of attractions, low capacity attraction, it makes sense to get as many butts in the seats for each showing since it, you know... Since you only have so many seats and then you have to wait until the next showing can go. So it makes sense.
Yeah, I would probably never take advantage of this because I'm very picky about where I sit for Soarin'. Mm-hmm. And it says right on the ticket, immediate boarding or choice of seat is not guaranteed. Special seating requests may not be accommodated. And of course, your parties will be separated. Mm-hmm. So for me, it's one of those... There's too many things that I'm particular about with Soarin' to make it the best experience, namely sitting in the middle,
middle.
The three sections. But I think that there's plenty of people who just don't care and they enjoy the attraction. They are by themselves.
Side note, do you remember what we learned on Soarin' in our VIP tour?
That the Imagineers sit in the second row of the middle?
Yes.
Which was shocked.
Where we sat. So we sat in the Imagineer preferred row of Soarin' that time round.
Yeah.
Well, the construction in Downtown Disney is finally showing good signs of progress. Vertical construction has begun after over a year of mostly being just dirt. The area is coming together quickly now that the foundation was poured. Foundation was just poured last week, too.
So I was just telling Teresa... That it had sat seemingly... So I watched a lot of Fresh Baked construction updates. David over there does like one a week or something. Mm-hmm. And I love... Spoiler alert. That is like... I mean, it's not a spoiler alert. But like, that's usually the only videos I watch from Fresh Baked because I like his construction. Those are my favorite. But he has been watching this pile of dirt seemingly forever. And so the fact that there was foundation, I was very excited. Oh, finally, we get some foundation. And then tonight, as I'm writing the script for the show, I see vertical construction. And I'm like, they are moving now.
In all honesty, Dave and I were talking about this while I'm prepping for tonight's recording. And I said, so I saw last week they poured the foundation, but I didn't allow myself to get too excited. And that's why I didn't put it in to the news stories for the show, because I figured we would have foundations sitting there for months. So the fact that when we were looking through news getting ready for this week's episode and suddenly we've got quite a bit of vertical progress already, I was like, what? It was just so exciting.
Yes. Well, it looks like they've got a good section of brick, like walls, kind of already started. And then it looks like there's some steel infrastructure that takes it up maybe two stories. So, I mean, that's crazy. I'm excited. Guests excited to see what the Pixar Place Hotel will look like when the renovation is complete are in for a treat. Disney released concept art for the new lobby, and the new lobby partially opened. Mm-hmm. There's a Finding Nemo-inspired swimming area they released some concept art for, and a family play court. This was there was also some concept art showing off the upcoming restaurant Great Maple.
Okay, so everybody mid-last week was all excited about the new concept art, and I don't know, I wasn't as excited about it, but then earlier this week, our friend Philander was over, I don't know if he stayed or if he was visiting or if he was touring or what it was, why he was there, and he had all sorts of stories on his Instagram of the new lobby, and the gift shop is also open, and let me tell you, the details that I'm seeing, I was really excited about. I wasn't really sure because the only thing that I had seen as far as what the inside was going to look like that I remember very vividly was that big like mobile thing that were going to have in the Luxo ball and the Pixar ball and the Luxo lamp. That's like that's what I thought of, was this big, and it almost looks like a stained glass type thing that has all the different kind of rough shapes of different popular Pixar characters. But some of the other artwork that's now out on display in the newly opened, the lobby's not fully done, but it is open, and the gift shop, they're really fun. There's a ton of Pixar nods. Like, it's not just it's not all focused on one Pixar thing. It's all of them, and I think that's very fun. There's a lot of little, like, it's kind of, it's almost like hidden Mickey's, but it's like hidden Pixar. So you kind of look at some of these pieces of art and can kind of like pick out different movies and stuff. I thought that was cool.
Yeah. Looking at the lobby, the photo, Mice Chat, which we have linked in the show note, has some photos of the lobby as well. And this just looks kind of like clean and contemporary, and it looks really nice. The only thing that I commented to Teresa when we were writing this, which was kind of funny, was some of the artwork that they have behind the check-in desk is concept art of what the lobby will look like when it's done. Like. So I'm like, interesting. So I assume that this will eventually be like really cool, you know, Pixar related, you know, graphics.
I also enjoyed, you notice, it's set of like pardon our dust, it's pardon our pixels.
Yeah, that was cute.
Very cute.
The Great Maple stuff looks really great and modern. I'll tell you, this hotel is really getting a great makeover and modernization from what it was before, because it was feeling kind of like the forgotten stepkid.
Is that mini golf or is that shuffleboard that they've got on the roof, the like family play zone there?
I thought they had a bigger picture here.
Oh, I think it's shuffleboard maybe.
Yeah. But it looks like it's going to be cool. It looks like they've got some space that they're planning for some outdoor stuff. The gift shop looks pretty nice. There's lots of like little hidden elements from different Pixar movies and stuff like that, like Teresa was saying. In this one graphic, I can see stuff from Finding Nemo.
Look. You've got the
Pizza Planet, Monsters, Inc., The House from Up.
There's some ones that are a little bit more deep, like the Blimp, the Howard Munz. Is that his name? Munz? Howard?
Right.
Munz? Oh, no.
There's the Grape Soda. There's the E from Wall-E. Yeah, so there's a lot of nods here and real subtle, but it looks kind of like modern. There's a certain art style that it kind of is, which is really nice.
Charles Munz, his Blimp.
There you go.
That's a good one.
I'm excited to see this next time when this finally opens and we should go. I know it's a little bit of a walk, but we should go over there because it kind of gets forgotten.
Mm-hmm. A couple of new pairs of ears have been seen in the park. There is a new chocolate dunked churro set of ears, which features churros curled into circles, topped with dripping chocolate and a white sparkly bow in the center. Another new set of ears is from the new movie coming up, Elemental. This set features Ember Lumen and Wade Ripple, the two main characters from the movie representing fire and water. The bow is made of flames and a wave of water. It's so fun.
So first of all, unrelated to these ears, the photo that we have linked in the show notes from DL News today, they have this like security thing that I literally just noticed that I was like, that's
apparently these have been flying off the shelves, not in a good way.
The other thing too is I see that it looks like a churro, but to me my brain sees donut.
Yeah, it does feel like a donut because of course it's a churro wrapped in a circle and there's a hole in the middle, so it's like a churro donut.
But it also makes me want to eat it because it does look very good.
You know, I want to see these in person because photos, they look pretty realistic.
They
like
do.
Someone could just go take a bite out of them.
Can you imagine like a small kid thinking it's like a real churro chewing on it. But these elemental ones, when I saw this, I was like, there's so much going on and they look good. What do you think about these?
The thing that I like too is the quote unquote bow in the center is not a bow. So if you're not a person, if you're a person that likes ear headbands, but you don't need a bow, this is a good, it's a good kind of middle of the road. Because if you're a bow person, it's bow-like, but if you're not a bow person, it's also not a bow. So it's a good, like, in-between. So I think that's fun. Because I like the bows. I like the ones also without bows. But sometimes the ones without bows, it feels, I think maybe because you see the bows so often, it feels like there should be something in the middle. It almost feels like there's a gap if there isn't a bow. That's just my personal opinion. So I like this kind of middle ground decoration that they've got going on that ties in with the film and with the theme.
So are either of these ones that are going to end up in your collection?
Yeah. Those both? Churro ones.
The churro?
Probably because it's a snack. Like, come on. I love my Disney snacks. But Elemental, I think it depends. What if maybe, I mean, the trailer looks amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But what if it's not my movie?
Sure. I understand.
So, I feel like I need to get to know the movie better before I commit to a pair of
years. Well, that's good because the movie comes out before we go to the park next. So
There you go.
Well, June is Pride Month, and of course, Disney has a foodie guide out to help celebrate on both coasts. Walt Disney World has a lot of options, while Disneyland has fewer options, including a Mickey-shaped macaron and a Mickey Pride cookie. There's also some items in Downtown Disney at participating locations.
Ooh.
I just don't understand something because there's so many options in Disney World that I'm like, why can't we get some of this stuff at Disneyland? I want to point out one in particular. Is this the Pride Mousse cake? What is it? Is that what that is?
I don't know.
Is there a picture? Here it is.
Is it the Italian cookie?
I don't know.
Hang on, go back up. Italian cookie. A dark chocolate shell.
Where are you seeing it?
Le Petit Cafe, Pride Italian Cookies.
But there's no raspberry jam or anything in that.
I don't know.
Anyway, there's this thing that looks like a bunch of layers of cake that looks like it's covered in chocolate. It looks amazing, and I wish we had that at Disneyland. There's also a hand pie that looks pretty fun and exciting that also looks very good. But anyway, what does Disneyland have? Or is there something that you're particularly excited about?
Not things that are in the park I'm not as excited about, but... Oh, here they are. Over at Naples, there's the Pride and Candy cannoli, which is cannoli shells filled with ricotta cheese, cream cheese, powdered sugar, rainbow candy chips, and cotton candy flavoring. I don't know why those sound really interesting to me. And I also really like how the cream filling is so colorful and fun. I really like that. That was the one that stood out to me. Also, over at Ralph Brennan's Jazz Kitchen Express, there's Rainbow Crunch Glazed Beignets. It's a blueberry lemon glazed beignet topped with a crispy Rainbow Crunch cereal. That also sounded fun.
Oh, man.
Pride Night.
Pride Night has the rainbow gray stuff, which looks really good. There's a rainbow trifle, which also looks... I'm sorry. Rainbow desserts always look enticing to me.
They're just so fun and colorful.
And
I
what is this?
Them.
This is a...
And then there's also a couple of savory options over at Hungry Bear for the Disney After Dark Pride Night events. There's a pork belly sandwich with spiced pork belly, arugula salad, tomato, and chili garlic aioli on a brioche bun. Yum. And at the Stage Door Cafe, there is chicken gravy fries, which are fries topped with brie sauce, brown gravy, mozzarella, and diced fried chicken. That pork belly sandwich looks and sounds delicious.
That pork belly sandwich looks like that same pork belly that we get at the Food and Wine Fest on a burger. So I would try that.
Mm-hmm.
There's lots of great options.
Super fun. The other thing, too, is there's lots of different like merch. So there's, I feel like we have this before, the scented pride cake straw clip, which is available starting June 1st over the place.
As I scrolled past that, I thought that was an actual piece of cake until I looked closer.
There's a Pride Parade Castle tumbler. They had this, I believe, last year. Fun fact, when we went on our holiday tour, they gifted us one of these tumblers. Mm. So Tag and I have this tumbler. Also available June 1st while supplies last basically all over the place. There's a really nice Pride stainless steel tumbler, which has, it's like the rainbow colors, but they're kind of blended in together. This really fun, really beautiful Pride Mickey popcorn bucket. And there's a Pride mirrored Mickey Mouse sipper. So it's like a disco ball Mickey rainbow goodness thing. Available all over the place. Like,
yeah, there's tons of places. It's like anywhere you can buy this type of food, that's where that's at.
I did a real quick count. It's available at they're available at like 22 locations.
Holy jeez.
Between the two parks. So
wow.
They're all over the place. So yeah, very fun. Very, very fun. Well, the Disney volunteers have delivered over 40,000 children's books to families to inspire reading. Since 2000, millions of books have been donated to First Books, a nonprofit that works to ensure educational equity by providing free and low-cost books serving kids in need.
This is cool. I mean, we've seen the volunteers do things before, like build parks and do all of this stuff, but they're really trying to inspire reading during the summer when a lot of, you know, students, you know, they read during the school year because, like, it's, you know, things happen, you know, you're assigned reading tasks and stuff. But over the summer, the kids don't have to read unless it's a passion of theirs. So they're trying to provide kids with books so they will read during the summer months. And that's great.
The thing that's really cool is Disneyland Resort cast members from the HOLA Readers Program there's photos in the Disney Parks blog of them visiting students at Orange Grove Elementary, and they do this each year, and they host 12 weeks of learning, bilingual story time, and career days. So that means they read stories in both English and Spanish to the children throughout the mornings. I think that's so cool and so fun. So this is something, you know, a program that they're doing a lot. It's not like, oh, this once a year we donate a bunch of books.
Right.
No, they're going and they're interacting with these kids and having fun story times with them and sharing all the different wonderful Disney stories. So I think that's so fun.
Yeah. That's a lot of books, too. Mm-hmm. Millions of books. 40,000 just this summer. That's awesome.
DL Weekly announces the boarding of the Trivia Express, nonstop Starspeeder service to the moon of Endor. All passengers, please prepare for immediate boarding.
Hello, welcome to Trivia Land. How are you two doing this fine, whatever time of day listeners are listening?
Well, we'll see once you get to the questions.
Yeah.
He was throwing around a couple of different topics as to what we might be into tonight, or what we might be getting ourselves into, so...
I mean, it was basically your idea since
since have
Splash Mountain is glowing away forever.
Glowing away forever, yes.
Ah, Lord.
I don't know what else to say.
Is it Splash Mountain?
We're doing four Splash Mountain questions.
Drained for the final time.
Yes.
So you said yes, it is Splash Mountain?
All Splash Mountain tonight.
Oh, goodness. Okay.
All Splash, all the
and
time.
You can only blame me for this one.
I don't have my poncho, though. Is that going to be a problem?
Hopefully you're sitting near the back where you get a little less wet, right? And, you know, thankfully they toned it down. I enjoyed learning about Splash Mountain tonight that they delayed opening it because of how wet the executives got. Hilarious.
I think that's so funny. So funny.
I love it.
I'm trying to figure out how bad that was because I know how doused and soggy you can get currently. So how, like... You know what I mean?
So in that, like, decade, were they having issues like this? Because I feel like Indy had the same thing where they were like, man, Indiana Jones is too violent and we had to, like, tone it down.
Yeah,
and Splash was too wet. We had to tone it down. So were the Imagineers, like, super thrill seekers back then? And then they're just like, oh, we've gone too far, folks.
Maybe. Maybe.
Just really trying to achieve the ultimate experience, right?
I guess. They're like, man, you know, these big roller coaster parks like Knott's and Six Flags, we got to do something like that. And then they're like, nope, too far.
Well, let's jump into the questions on that one. It's a good segue. The first question is, which Imagineer conceived the idea for this attraction? And you can impress me more if you know, like, where they were that inspired them.
Oh, it was Tony Baxter in traffic.
Yeah, I was going to say he was stuck in traffic. I don't remember what.
Like on his way to work,
highway.
I think it was.
Yep.
Like I-5, maybe?
Ooh, that's a good question answer
stuck
for that one.
In traffic.
That's confidence on the Imagineer.
We knew it was stuff in traffic because this is a story he tells.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. All right. Your second question this week. Back in episode 62, way back when, you learned, read, you got it wrong, that Splash Mountain was going to originally be named Zippity River Run, but ultimately they went with Splash Mountain. Disney historians say then-CEO Michael Eisner suggested the name to help promote what?
The movie Splash.
The movie Splash, which has nothing to do with
which
Splash
Which is so
Mountain.
Weird, right? Like, how did he connect that together? I just don't get it.
All right. Third question. Don't jump to an answer too quick on this one. For this attraction, a lot of the animatronics were repurposed from America Sings. Mm-hmm. I know you know that one already. What building did they call home for that show from 1974 to 1988?
Well, it's the building that's now known
as... I call it the Carousel of Progress building.
Yeah,
but the now Star it's, Trader... what, Interventions?
Well, it was Interventions, but
the Interventions
now it's the...
building.
Now it's the Star... Not Trader. Star... Launch Bay. It's the Star Wars
Launch
Bay.
Yeah. I don't know what the building's name truly is. I always call it the Interventions building.
I thought it was just the Carousel of Progress building is what most, like, old-timers called it.
Look, we just, like, named... Did
everything
we just name
that's
everything that's been in that building?
I think so.
Accidentally, yeah.
And maybe you actually get to know the real name if you didn't already say it. So, fun times coming. And our final question. During the attraction, Brer Bear can be heard snoring in his house. It pays homage to what other character?
Oh.
Oh, was it?
It was something to do with it being Bear Country.
Was it the snoring guy from the Country Bears?
It was a recording from that, because it used to be, before it was Critter Country, it was like Bear Country.
Yep.
And it was a noise that they had. It was a character. I don't know if
because
it was the character.
The people on the wall would wake him up.
Yeah, I don't remember if it's his snore, if it's a different bear's snore, that like a different bear that just lived there.
Mm.
And like it was an ambiance noise thing.
I don't know. I'm gonna say it was from like the character in the show, but I don't remember his name.
Yeah, I'm gonna say it was a bear just in Bear Country. I don't know.
Wait.
The big one?
No, Al? No. There was part of the song and the name is eluding me. It was in the song.
Weekly Tears, are you screaming right now? Screaming names to try to get Tegan Teresa to hear it?
Rufus? Hey, Rufus? Rufus.
Rufus, that's
I'm going to say
right.
Rufus. Hey, Rufus, wake up. No. Hey, something, wake up. It's showtime. It's not Jose. I know it sounds like it's also from... it also sounds like it's from the Tiki Room.
Yeah, that's really Jose's snore coming
right?
from the bear cage.
Yes. I didn't know parrots could snore, but apparently. And they sound like bears.
And people would
loudly
scream and wake him up, and Jose would just go, oh.
Yeah. There you go.
So are you going with Rufus, or are you going
I'll
with the
go
bear?
With
I'm
going
to go with Rufus, too. I don't think it was the guy in the show, though.
Melvin. Hey, Melvin, wake up. It's showtime. Melvin. I'm going to say Melvin.
Melvin. We're going
Melvin's
Melvin.
The moose, but okay, you can say Melvin.
Melvin. Teresa. I don't know. I'm probably wrong on all of these.
Teresa, you're sticking with Rufus? Going
I'm
to Melvin?
Sticking with Rufus, because I don't know what my bear's name was. So Rufus. Rufus is like, it sounds familiar, and I don't know
goodness
why. So we're
gracious.
Just going to go with it.
Okay.
What a world we went through. So, all right, well, we're climbing our way up to the big drop, but we can't go down until after a discussion topic, right?
Oh, dang, I had like all
later.
Sorts of good stuff in my brain. I was like, ooh, he's going to ask about Splash. It was open July 17th, 1989. The drop is 52 feet. Like, I had all these weird Splash facts in my brain.
I know you know those.
Well, for this week, we are very happy to have on Rick Law, who is an illustrator and has done all sorts of Disney things. We met him the first time at Disneyana last year. We bumped into him again this year, and we are so happy to have you. Rick, welcome to DL Weekly.
Thank you for having me. So I'm very pleased to be here.
Well, thanks for making time for us. We're going to start to kind of give a little background for our listeners who may not know about you. So tell us your Disney story. What got you interested in Disney? You can be as detailed as you like with this. So you can give cliff notes. You can go into some detail. It doesn't really matter. Just kind of how did everything start for you with your Disney love, I guess?
Well, my earliest Disney memory, as I probably was a kid, was my mom taking me to see Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs as a re-release at the theater. I think that was the first movie I ever saw. And Willie Ito and I were talking about this recently because Snow White was the first movie he saw as well as a kid. And so I went back and I looked, And I figured out that I was 5 years old. It was 1975 re-release based on that. So that was the first movie I ever saw and, you know, got the Disney bug going, I guess. But for many, many years growing up, you know, I was always drawing ever since kindergarten. I just drew. That was just in me. But I, you know, I grew up in a time before the internet or, you know, opportunities for artists kind of were harder to come by, I think, when I grew up, or at least I wasn't aware of them. So when I was going through high school, for me, it was trying to figure out where am I going to find an opportunity to draw. And it was just trying to find any outlet that I could. I eventually came to Los Angeles. I started kind of gigging around and doing commercials and television shows and odds and ends of things. And eventually I got an opportunity to come and work at the Disney or, you know, do a gig at the Disney company. A friend of mine worked there. Although I never really saw that, you know, there was a few places that I had targeted. I thought, well, as opportunities where potentially I could be an artist and work at. One was Lucasfilm, one was Jim Henson, and one was the Disney company. Didn't think I'd ever actually make it to any of those. And what was interesting is because eventually I ended up working with all of those.
Disney.
But eventually, so I had a friend that was an art director at Disney, and they initially brought me in, wasn't to draw, it was to work in the shipping room. So at that time, Home Entertainment, he worked for Home Entertainment, and Home Entertainment was VHS's, and they would service 70 different countries around the world at that time. So we would go every time a release would come out, which was about 5 or 6 releases a month. They would put together all the elements for that cover art and that package to go to each of these countries around the world. And so we put together these kits. And so I was brought in to kind of help create these kits and ship them off to each country. So because some countries, of course, they want to change the title treatment or the color of the cover around to fit their culture. Some countries don't like the color blue for certain reasons. And other countries, they just want to change certain elements. So we would put together these packages, and that was my primary job. Regular kind of gig that I had when I started the company. I had actually done some rare kind of stuff even before that, but that was the first kind of regular, and they were just like, oh, one or twosy kind of things. But that was kind of coming in regularly and doing that. And then one day someone had at the office a birthday and had put a card on the door like everybody does to, you know, everybody's signing the card, happy birthday to them. And I went and drew a picture of Mickey, a little Mickey head on it to say happy birthday to the person. And the lead art director happened to be walking by and saw that and stopped and said, hey, who drew this? And everybody kind of got quiet and pointed at me. And I did a big gulp thinking like, oh, no, now I'm fired.
You're like, is this a copyright infringement or what?
Yeah,
what happened?
I didn't really know. Like, I was like, you know, it's only certain people supposed to draw Mickey. Did that. And so they all kind of pointed at me. And then she said, do you draw? And I said, yeah. And then she said, okay, from now on, you work for me.
Wow.
And so that was the day that kind of changed everything for me. And it started that I started doing cover concepts and exploratories and doing cover art and working with them on a different kind of level.
Wow.
And so that was kind of how I started my Disney journey. So I did that working with Home Entertainment through a lot of different shifts and changes over the years, but until 2008. So it was 15 years of that, working until 2008. And then the art director that actually had brought me to Disney, Bradley Gross, he had shifted over. He had started his own company for a while, ad agency kind of, and doing creative services, still for the company, but as well for other companies. And I'd worked with him off and on. And he had gotten shifted over to do logo designs for Disney Publishing and specifically a business that was starting called Disney English. And so we went in and started working on that to kind of create a presentation for the logo of Disney English in this new business division. And then he got brought on to be the global creative director for Disney English and hired me on as the first person under him to build the creative department for Disney English. And so we went and built, we're the lead creatives, internal lead creatives for Disney English.
Wow.
And then that was the schools in China.
Wow.
Teaching English as a second language and using the Disney stories and properties to help teach English to kids in China. Wow. And so within 9 months, we had built all the curriculum, all the books, everything for Disney English, the uniforms, the schools themselves, the facilities, designing all this stuff. So going from, one kind of design to a completely different kind of design. So we had done all that, and we opened the schools in October of 2009, and then immediately went back to starting to redesign the schools. All the things that we figured out that we got wrong in the first place, going back to fix all those and redesign it, as well as we start up their license business for their license materials, help build Disney English into kind of a going concern and figuring out what it was going to be for the future. That eventually transitioned for me into Disney Learning, where we got our arms around all of the educational space for Disney. So I became the creative manager for Disney Learning, and then eventually started working with, a lot of the legends and other people as part of that. And so all the global materials, educational product around the world would come through myself or my team.
Wow.
And then eventually went on to produce some documentaries. We did Floyd Norman's documentary. We did a documentary on Drew Struzan that I did, and some other kinds of projects that kind of aligned with my role at the company, as well as just stuff that I would do because I was interested in, you know, just love the Disney history and the legacy and trying to push forward with that. So, so that's kind of, in a nutshell, a long nutshell there, my Disney history, I guess. So,
wow.
As part of Disney English, that was the Chinese government saw the success of Disney English in China. So they were very, and the success of that led to them saying, okay, we want Shanghai Disneyland to happen now, where the company had been wanting to do that for many, many years. So it finally allowed them to say yes to Shanghai Disneyland, but it also allowed us then, because the Chinese government, the mandate then was, all right, the Shanghai park has to be an educational park.
Mm.
And the whole entire company was like, what is an educational park? So it led ourselves and our team then to consult with Imagineering to work with them and trying to figure that what that out was going to be, how that was going to be. So I was consulting on Shanghai Disneyland as part of that. In my process, I guess, of my Disney story, I created a lot of different products for the company off and on around the company. You may have seen one of them that's pretty well known at Disneyland and Disney World was the Toy Story Alien shirt that happened. It's green shirt and just has the face of the Toy Story Alien.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So the eyes and the mouths and stuff. So yeah, that was one I helped create. So
that's fun.
And I was always always annoyed they never made it an adult size.
You're like, wait a minute, I would like to wear
Disney
this, please.
Does this? There's been two designs that I could think of right off the top of my head that Teresa's known this. We've gone into World of Disney and I've been like, that's a great shirt. Oh, it only comes in the child size. Why are they not making everything in all the sizes? Because there's adult shirts the kids would like. Why?
Space.
It's space. It's also, it has to do with metrics and quotas and things that happen at a corporate level. So, you know, just because something might be, it may be popular and make a certain amount of money for the company. But if it doesn't make beyond, if they are not assured that it's going to make beyond, like if the quota has to be 1 million units, we have to sell that. And they feel like it's only going to sell 999,000. They won't do it. And so, they're guaranteed to sell a whole lot of kid shirts in that there may be some adults that want that shirt like me. But you know, it's not going to be as popular of a seller. And so they won't create it. And so, so it has to sell a certain amount. So they want to avoid putting stuff at the Disney outlet.
Wow. I mean, I don't blame them for that.
That makes sense. Well, I am super excited too. I took all sorts of notes while you were telling us your abridged version, so we can go back and kind of dig a little more into some of those, because that's a very, very cool history you have with the company.
Thanks. It's been it's 30 years in 2023. So I started in 1993. Mm-hmm. It'll be that I've been working with and associated with the company, and so pleased to be ever connected to the history and the legacy. You know, for me, that's always been the biggest thing of my Disney story, I guess, is that it wasn't until I'd been there about 20 years and I saw, I compare it to always kind of like when you're taught in kindergarten, or not kindergarten, elementary school, in middle school, about the strata. There's the prehistoric strata, and then, you know, the Mesozoic strata, and all of these rock stratas that you see throughout time and stuff. And gradually over my Disney time, I've seen how these stratas kind of are now in the Disney history, the lineage and stuff. And, you know, I used to think it was funny because I still remember when fans came up and started calling it the Disney Renaissance. Mm. And I thought that was such a funny term, because I say, oh, what comes after the Renaissance? And, and if you know your history, you know, it starts getting into some kind of eras that aren't the greatest. But we start having these eras, these Disney eras, and now as time has gone on even more, I realize that that's not actually so funny anymore, like this Renaissance period or these different periods, naming them after these things. But I can kind of start seeing myself like within these stratas and how everything's kind of connected, these threads. And that is kind of mind-boggling to me, to be just as part of that, part of that history. I could look at my life as half of my life I've worked with the company now. And that was kind of strange. And now it's gone beyond that. And it's, so it's still humbling for me and surreal, and many, many times very surreal to me to be part of that. But I'm very grateful for it, so...
Wow. Well, we're excited to learn more. But before we kind of dive into those, we're going to just...
That was just the first question.
I know. Like, so this is going to be great.
I'll try and be shorter than Terry Hart.
No, yeah, you're good. You're good. All right. So when entering Disneyland on your first day of a visit, which way do you like to go? So we are habitual. We always go left. We always go over to Adventureland when we get to the hub. Hmm. Do you kind of have a routine or something that you like to do first when you go to the parks?
First, well, I will say when I enter the park, almost invariably I go to the right and under the railroad tracks, under the sign. There's been a few times I've gone to the left to go to guest services or something like that, but I always go to the right. And then I don't know. In my younger days, it probably would have been towards Tomorrowland, Star Tours, or, you know, some of the more exciting kind of stuff over there to see first. Nowadays, I find myself a lot, especially with friends, that we head to, like, for whatever reason, Fantasyland a lot first. Recently it was to go see Snow White, kind of redo of Snow White's adventure, but it changes. You know, it's interesting. My park journeys, when I think of them from when I was 16 to now, and how that's kind of shifted, because now it's more about, it used to be when I was a kid, like there wasn't an hour in the day that you could waste. It was, I grew up from a very poor family, and if I was at the park, it was a treat. Mm-hmm. And it was, I can't waste a day of this or an hour of this. So for every moment of the day, I got to get in as many rides as I can. That's what it was all about. Where now, especially with me having worked at the company and being able to kind of visit the park quite a bit, now I really enjoyed watching people and how other people interact with the park. So there's been times at the park, one really memorable time I can remember, that I went one day and I just went down for a few hours after work, and I got a corn on the cob across from Big Thunder Railroad and sat on the bench, and the little finches that sit up in those trees all came and started sitting on my knees and like eating off my corn on the cob and sitting on my shoulders. And people were coming by and thinking that I was like one of the attractions or something. It just was this rare, magical kind of feed the birds moment.
Yeah. I was going to say, you're like the bird lady from Mary Poppins.
Yeah.
I was going to say, we're like Snow White with her little friends. Oh, yeah. Too, you know?
It was fascinating, you know, and even for me, and I, you know, I just remember that, and I will always have a fond memory of that as a moment at the park. And, you know, and that's not like a typical answer for people like, oh, what's the attraction you like to go see? Well, it's not really an attraction, but I was like, wow, that was like one of the coolest things ever. Mm-hmm. You know, for me, going along and watching the ducks or, you know, just watching little kids interact at the park,
yeah,
seeing how they see it through their eyes is, you know, that's where the true magic is. So it's interesting how people take in the park and how they react to it. You know, I feel like I've been very blessed to see those things. And I know I have in visiting the park in the way that I have. So, yeah. So my interactions. So when you ask that, it's changed over the years, and it still, I think, still continues to evolve and change in as much as the park continues to evolve and change.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, you talked about when you were younger, like any amount of time out of the park, you know, it was just, you know, you needed to get every bit out of it. We go quite often. I don't want to speak for Teresa, but I don't think she's quite like where I was. Cause like on this last trip, she was tired. We knew we had to fly early the next day. And I was like, I'm going to stay till closing because I just love being in the park, mm-hmm. and any amount of time that I can spend in the park. Like I hear about, and I get it with families. I don't have like little kids or anything, but you know, they talk about like, oh, we go back to the hotel to have like a pool break in the middle of the day. And I'm like, what are you talking about? You're giving up. You can go to the pool anytime. So yeah. I know that feeling.
But yeah, well, when refreshed.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, when I was, so the first time I ever went to the park, I was 16 years old and I had some friends that older friends, and they had convinced my mom that we were going to go to San Diego Comic-Con. I lived up in Northern California or Central California, sorry, in Salinas, I grew up. And so we're about 8 hours away from San Diego from Comic-Con. And on our way down, we were going to stop at Disneyland. And so they all convinced us. And so that was my first time ever experiencing the park with my buddies. And it was, you know, that was the time when they were still doing the dream. They'd give out prizes for everybody that came. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you were like every 10th prize, you could win like a, was it 30th prize or something, you win a free ticket or you'd get a pin or even a car you could win. So we went and it was amazing. And I had gone back home after Comic-Con, this life-changing kind of experience I'd had that whole week at Comic-Con and Disneyland. And our family had never had a vacation before because we were just very poor. My mom was like, well, where should we go on vacation? You know, if we were to do one, like, what should we do? And I was like, are you kidding me? We should go to Disneyland completely. And so we ended up going to Disneyland, back to Disneyland. And so this was my second trip. And of course, I'm still 16 years old and I'm like this every moment. And we got into Disneyland. I was like, well, we've got to ride Star Tours. It's amazing. It's a ride that doesn't go anywhere. Because my mom was like, I don't like roller coasters. I said, it doesn't go anywhere. It stays there. So we get on it and my mom did not like that ride.
Oh, no.
So we get off and she wants to go sit down. And well, let's go get some lunch and sit down and eat and her kind of, you know, digest with my little sister. And my little sister was like, oh yeah, that sounds like a great idea. And I was like, what are you talking about? Like, this is not happening. I came all the way to Disneyland and now you guys want to sit? Like, you just want to sit and eat? I was like, oh, so I wasn't having that. And I just went off on my own and rode rides all day long. And eventually, I don't even think we made a plan where to meet back up. It was just, I'm going off, I'm doing my thing, and one of these days we'll re-meet. So we eventually did at the end of the day. And but that was my second visit to Disneyland. And it was like, okay, I'm going to go do this thing. And you guys can go enjoy Disneyland your way, and I'm going to go enjoy it my way. But as I've gotten older, like I say, I appreciate that much, much more now. Mm-hmm. There's been times I've gone to the park and taken a notebook and just gone and found a table like by Carnation Cafe there, or by the Coke Corner, and just sat there and kind of watched the parade and watched people go by, and you know, sketched all day, and you know, those kind of things. And I really appreciate those moments now. And so it's each their own on how they enjoy them.
It must be interesting. Man, we're never going to get through these four questions, but it must be interesting. No, I mean, because like now I'm I want to ask all these follow-up questions.
And please do.
What is it like? It must be interesting because you work in a unique position. And you know, I assume like, you know, a lot of Imagineers are in this position. A lot of people that work for Disney are in this position, but it must be interesting to sit there and be sketching or whatever in the park. And all these people have walked by and they probably know your work, but they don't know it's you. Like, yeah. That has to be such an interesting feeling of like anonymity. You have a job that your work is so public, and yet your identity is so anonymous. Isn't that interesting?
Well, sometimes people will say like, oh, you're famous. And my constant response to that is, I'm not famous. Mickey Mouse is famous. Like, it's reflected glory. If you know, and I'm grateful and I'm humbled by it, and that anybody is impacted by the work and enjoys it, like, that is still quite humbling to me. And I'm very appreciative of that. But it's about the characters and the storytelling and those things. And so, you know, I was having this discussion just recently with somebody about how I say, you know, these things, it's not about the products or even the experience. It's about what those things mean to people and those memories that they're drawing from those things. So, you know, whenever we're making a product or whatever, it's what those characters mean, what their stories mean. So when I was consulting for Shanghai Disneyland, that was one of the biggest things I was talking with the Imagineers about, because they were really interested in our learnings from Disney English and China and how the Chinese people were responding to these characters that really weren't well known before Disney English there. They were recognized as icons. Mickey was recognized as icon in China. But the stories behind Mickey Mouse and Donald Duck and stuff, they were not well known. You know, they would recognize a character and but it was a Western influence, and it's just like, okay, that's just a thing. It's an icon. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when I was telling the Imagineers, they had designed initially Main Street for Shanghai Disneyland. And the design that they had done, the initial design for Shanghai Disneyland Main Street, was amazing. It was not the Main Street that we recognize here, because Chinese people also don't know American history, Americana. They don't have any connection with that. So the Imagineers had designed a Main Street that was international in flavor, but instead went through our storytelling from beginning to end, so that the buildings actually changed as you went. So it went from like a Victorian street to Agrabah by the time you walked down the street. And it was like, it just went through all this, the buildings changed shape and stories as you went down the street and evolved. And I thought, this is amazing and it's cool and I want to go there. But as we had that discussion, you know, in telling them, you know, this was an opportunity throughout Shanghai Disneyland to introduce the Chinese people to the layers of story. I said one of the things that our guests get most out of going to Disneyland or Disney World is the layered storytelling, that they can go back again and again and see these different elements and pick out different things, these hidden Mickeys or whatever that relate to the storytelling. And there are, and they just kind of compound that for them and compound their experience and build a history and a love for the company and the storytelling all at the same time. And these characters. And so I said, you know, this is a unique opportunity with the Chinese public to come in and to learn about these characters. And so as part of that consultation, you know, they went back and they were already, unbeknownst to me, looking for a place for meet and greets for Mickey and Minnie already, because they didn't have a Toontown going on and that kind of thing. And so they took all of that. And in doing that, they redesigned all of Main Street to become Mickey Avenue, as opposed to the international kind of flair that it had previous to this. And so now it is directly, you come in and you meet right off the bat the Fab Five, and they're, you know, these characters that are the entry point for Disney and all of the Disney characters and the history that goes behind them. And the layered storytelling is very apparent in everything that you have there from the train station signs that say all the different kind of places that the train's going to go and the times that it comes in and all of that kind of thing, much like a runaway railway that, you know, they just put in at Toontown, has a lot of different Easter eggs and layered storytelling there as well. So, yeah, so all of that to get back to, I guess, to answer your question of how impactful it is, all of those different little things are what resonate with people. You know, the artwork resonates with them. It's not really my face or me, right? Or the characters.
All right, well, last kind of history, personal thing, and then we'll get into all the stuff. What is your favorite attraction? Even though it's a Disneyland podcast, it could be an attraction any park, any Disney park.
I thought about this. You guys sent over the question to me beforehand, and I thought about it last night, and I kept jumping around to different things. I guess if I was going to have to sum up, the one thing that I continue to always come back to is Tiki Room.
Ooh, I think you're our first Tiki Room
favorite.
And it's such a good attraction.
Yeah, and I don't know that people think of it as an attraction so much, but I like it's the only one you can actually go get a Dole Whip and sit in and just, you know, relax. Mm-hmm. You know, it hits me right at this intersection of my 16-year-old self and my 53-year-old self now, where it's still a show and attraction and goofy enough that I can get into and enjoy it. But at the same time, I can sit there. I'm not, it's not like, oh, it's not chills and thrills. Although you do have when it, you know, the storm comes and the drops start happening and stuff. And it still speaks straight to the legacy and the history of what Walt wanted and created for his park. And it goes to Rolly's kind of sense of humor with all of that. And so Rolly Crump. And it just is right there. You know, it's either for, you know, where I'm at now in my life, it's either that or Mr. Lincoln. Mm. Both of those, I don't think there's a time I go to the park anymore and I don't go and view those. And in part two, I think that they sit at this intersection for me in my career and stuff, which is an interesting thing that I think the parks have kind of gotten away a little bit from, of entertainment and education. So it's soft education, but it is still teaching you something. And where I don't know necessarily some newer rides, I think they're more about the chills and the thrills and the fun of it, but it's not necessarily teaching you anything. And where I think Walt was very much about that and trying to find ways to educate even underneath all entertainment. You know, Mr. Lincoln does that very specifically, and the Tiki Room does that even just about different cultures, even though it's kind of tongue-in-cheek. It teaches you kind of about that and the Polynesian Islands and that kind of thing. So both of those hit me in different ways.
You know, you brought up a good point. I was just trying to think. I'm like, what other things are still at the park that still are educational? The train, that'd be one that I thought of, and then both, I'd say the Columbia and the Mark Twain are the other ones that come to mind. I'm not sure if I can think of any other.
Well, Jungle Cruise in its own way.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
It's a small world.
Oh, small world. That's a good one. Yep.
Yeah. So again, these are themes that were kind of underlying the attraction itself that I don't know necessarily that today the company thinks about in the same way. Sure. And a lot of it is driven by IP. So rather than themes, and that's kind of gotten a little bit lost. And hopefully there can be that thought towards those in the future. And bring that back.
Seems like there's always a cycle. And, you know, we talk about CEOs. There's kind of a cycle, you know, that we hit these kind of golden eras and everything's all the fans are happy. All the theme park people are happy. And then, you know, we budget cut and et cetera. And there's the dark times and then it comes back. And so I think
ebbs and flows.
Yeah. So I think that that's just I think that's any aspect of Disney's businesses. I think that just happens. And we're probably in an IP heavy time. And I assume at some point in the future we'll hopefully,
however,
have something.
The treehouse, the fact that they
took
an IP away from an attraction and gave it kind of its own unique story. That was really exciting to see that, because I kind of thought that was something in the past for the parks.
Yeah.
So I was really excited that happened.
I was just talking with somebody recently about this. Actually, some of these conversations align. The company and the history and the legacy, even though they're intrinsic and they go together, they're kind of two separate things. And for fans, it's hard to separate those things or see how it as a business as opposed to the thing that they love. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for them, it's hard to assimilate changes or understand them sometimes because it's the emotional reaction to it rather than the understanding of that. And even if they understand it, they really want to reject it sometimes. So I get that. And for me, working with the company as long as I have to kind of see and balance both sides of that coin. And I try to find grace for people in all manners, whether they're executives or not. But it's a balance, and it's hard for executives to come in sometimes and assimilate that and assimilate the way the fans respond to it, because the way that fans respond to the parks or to Disney is not necessarily quantifiable on paper as a metric, as a business metric. They can't figure that out. And when you have corporations, that's what they work on now. That's how they budget for things. That's how they do that. And so that doesn't always translate. And so what it ends up being is it specific people within the company that have to fight for things or not even fight for things, but just be able to communicate that and express it in a way so that the higher ups understand that and realize that it is important. Mm-hmm. So that's the nature of what Disney is today, you know, and it, again, like you say, it's the push and pull and these things go through cycles.
Yep.
So hopefully right now we're in a better one. We have Bob Iger's back and he understands, I think, those things, the push and pull of that a bit better than maybe some other executives. You know, he calls it, as he always says, brand deposits and brand withdrawals. So he tries to balance the bad news with the good news.
Sure. Nope, that makes sense.
Try to make everybody happy. So you're never going to be able to do that, but you try as best as possible.
Yeah.
Yep. It's a really difficult job.
Oh.
And I don't think fans quite give that level of understanding to these folks that it's, you know, the Disney company is not just a theme park or a movie studio. It's a bunch of movie studios and a bunch of theme parks and television networks and marketing. And, you know, they have clothing lines and there's just, it's kind of a little bit of everything. And people pick the thing that they hold dear with the company, right? Like you said, people get this emotional connection to things. And, you know, some people have a real emotional connection to the movies. For me personally, my connection with Disney is the theme parks. Honestly, in general, I don't really care that much about the rest of the company. I'm a theme parks guy. You know, of course, I want the company as a whole to do well, but I don't, you know, like I'm not a, I have to go see every Disney movie, and I haven't even seen all the animated classics, which what? Teresa makes fun of me for all the time.
Yeah. Because, thank you, Rick. It's like,
because
what?
My connection to Disney is the theme parks.
Yeah.
And I love the theme parks. The theme parks mean so much to me. And so my focus is always the theme parks with the company. And so, but there's so much more, you know, they've got the movie studios and the streaming platform, you know. Anyway, let's get into some of your history, I think. Well, that's all that could fit into this episode with Rick this week, but please
tune in next week.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
It's okay. I'll be the only weekly tier without an answer. Make sure you send your questions to producer James or producer Vern at trivia@doweekly.net.
Welcome back to Trivia Land. We're having a zippity doo dah time. The only song from the IP that inspired that attraction that still plays in the park. Are we having a zippity doo dah time?
Oh, we'll find out. I'm very curious about the bear question, that last
one. Yes.
Yes, as always, it seems to be the last one, but we have to start at the beginning.
Unfair. We should mess with everybody and go backwards.
Oh,
that is, I'm just kidding.
Maybe. So I have some fun facts to go with these as well, since we're going to keep on paying some tribute. So my first question was, which Imagineer conceived the idea for this attraction? And impress me more if you know what inspired them. I'm not surprised you both knew Tony Baxter sitting in traffic, likely in Rush Hour on the 5.
Hey!
Along with Tony Baxter, Disney legend Mark Davis was both an animator on Song of the South and also designed the animatronics that appeared in America Sings that eventually got repurposed.
Oh, well, that's convenient.
Yeah, so nice little touch there. Knowing the source material is good. Question number 2. Ultimately, I wanted to know why the attraction was named Splash Mountain instead of Zippity River Run. Michael Eisner suggested to help promote Splash, a Disney movie from 1984 starring Tom Hanks.
Wasn't it like a mermaid, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, a person was saved by a mermaid, and then years later, they found each other again or something.
Aww.
Then CEO Michael Eisner actually wanted to add an animatronic mermaid to the attraction.
What?
Yep.
That doesn't even fit with the storyline.
Which is why Imagineers shot it down.
Which well, is I'm, why it does not exist
I'm
there
glad
today.
The Imagineers were like, I know you're the CEO.
No, no,
and you're
no.
the boss of
no,
bosses,
no.
but no.
But no. Anyway, moving on. Third question. I wanted to know what building housed the America Sings animatronics that were repurposed for Splash Mountain.
This is also one that's interesting to know.
Yeah, because we described every... Well, we named all the shows that were in the building, but I don't think we actually named the building.
You didn't give me the name of the building, but I'm giving you a half point for giving me every detail about the building. It's called Tomorrowland's Carousel Theater.
Carousel Theater.
Whoever calls it that? Nobody.
Nobody does.
The ones that know, that's what it's called.
Yeah. Yep.
We will know.
I found it interesting to learn about Splash Mountain, too. It's the only mountain ride that isn't a roller coaster, at least, you know, around the time it came out.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
And it's the only one to be based on a movie instead of an original IP.
Oh, yeah. The only mountain that's based on a movie and not an original.
Which is still going to be true.
Oh.
Interesting.
That's right, because Big Thunder.
Yeah.
Space. Matterhorn. Everest.
Expedition Everest, yeah.
Yeah. Huh. Wow. Mind blown.
Mm-hmm.
Teaching you some good stuff. Since my trivia hasn't been too stumped.
And it wasn't even a bad... It wasn't even marking us down for trivia. It was just supplemental.
I know. So generous this week. The last question, the one you've been waiting for. During the attraction, Brer Bear can be heard snoring in his house. Pays homage to what other character? The character was indeed from Country Bear Jamboree... The large bear worked behind the scenes at Grizzly Hall for the Jamboree, changing lights and scenery. And when it was bear country, there was a house, or at least a cave along a path,
yes.
and you could hear this person That's snoring. This person's name is Rufus.
I love how I gave you the answer. You went with it. I talked myself out of the answer. So I would like to say playing Teresa this week is Tay, because you do this to yourself all the time.
Oh, I love it.
You do this to yourself all
I
the
do.
Time.
I'm so happy it worked in my favor this time.
Yeah.
As soon as you said Rufus, I'm like, that's it. That
did
sounded right.
Do they say, hey, Rufus, wake up, it's showtime?
I don't know Country Bear GM very well enough to say.
Yeah, but
sure.
See, that's so funny because you and I were both right. Because I'm like, no, he just like had, he was just like a character that had a cave, like a thing in the park.
Okay, anyway.
Yeah, and you're like, no, no, he's part of the show. Well, we
didn't really
both
appear
right.
much, you know, behind the scenes.
Oh, that's amazing.
So, no,
you're welcome.
I tried to tell you Melvin was the
I loose. Know, but would you have guessed Rufus?
As soon as you said Rufus, I'm like,
no,
I think that's right.
No, but would you
right.
have guessed Rufus?
Maybe, I don't know.
So, you're welcome.
You know, that reaction, you'd think Teresa went to the laughing place, right?
Oh! You're both fired.
But no more. We move on to Tiana. And I think it should be exciting. So, well, that was a fun trivia episode. I'm sure we'll get back to your regularly scheduled trivia next week. And listeners, if you want to be a part of that, you can send producer Vern and I an email at trivia@dlweekly.net.
Well, we will be back next week with more Disneyland news and information.
Until then, go out and enjoy the parks.
Please remain seated until the podcast comes to a complete stop and the doors have opened. Then collect your belongings, watch your head, and step carefully from the episode. On behalf of all of our crew, thanks for traveling with us, and we hope you have a happy and memorable visit here at DL Weekly.
I've got prostate cancer, but I really wanted to make it to the big game with my grandson. And here we are. Go, 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 go! Go.
With ERLEADA, apalutamide, being there is possible. ERLEADA is a prescription medicine used to treat prostate cancer that has spread to other parts of the body and still responds to a medical or surgical treatment that lowers testosterone. Erleada may cause serious side effects, including heart disease, stroke, or severe skin reactions, which can lead to death, falls, fractures, and seizure. Seek immediate medical attention if you experience symptoms of a stroke or severe rash. Erleada can cause harm to or loss of an unborn baby. Common side effects were fatigue, joint pain, rash, decreased appetite, weight loss, high blood pressure, hot flash, and diarrhea. Ask your doctor if Erleada is right for you. Or tap this ad to visit Erleada.com. CP43926 7V1.